Coming up next, we have Why Self-Advocacy Matters, a forum and Q&A organised by SARU, the Self-Advocacy Resource Unit. The forum was held in Melbourne in November, looking at the importance of self-advocacy in the disability movement.
Peter Waters is one of the Raising Our Voices team members, and he's going to kick us off. Over to you, Peter.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to our inaugural Q&A question and answer. My apologies, I'm Peter Waters. I will be your facilitator for today, and hopefully you can understand what I say. If you can't, well, put your hand up and we will do something about it. Okay, I'm with the program, and my own good great panel. Jim Wood for Women with Disabilities, and I better Jim Wood with all women. Women who are being abused and violated. So welcome, Jim. Gender is one of my favourite advocates, Peter Ferguson. Peter is the president of the only organisation for brain injuries in Victoria, not Australia, brain injury matters. Peter, welcome. Corey is brand new to me, and she's never done it before. She is from the ICANN network. And what I don't know much about ICANN network, but I believe it's people have supported people with autism. So welcome, Corey. The panel keep on getting better. To my right, we have Liz Cairns. Liz is the Managing Director of NDIA, National Disability Insurance Agency. Welcome, Liz, and she's by. She's based right here in Geelong, so welcome to our panel. Now, I don't know why we had to introduce it, but I will. I got Sesame. She is coordinator of SABU. Self-advocacy resource unit, you will find her down at level, ground level rock house. Welcome to, I had a good afternoon with that. That thing I did is Tisha Maloney, well, Tisha, she has many roles and many portfolios. But today she's here as a bit of a devil's advocate and a bit of a comedian. So we may not agree with what she said. We may not agree with what she said all the time, but I can do it. It will be one battle that welcome dinner and I will enjoy the day. Okay, so we've done all the how could we've done focus on the shot of the same movie on a first place is from Neil Cameron.
Okay, the first question for today is self-advocacy on the map? In what way is it on the map? And if not, why not, and how does it get on the map?
Okay, what we do if you don't nominate a person to I will nominate that person for you. So I may not have a way to start for you. It's self-advocacy on that.
Well, it's an interesting question, isn't it? In this room, in Victoria, it probably is on the map. But I'm thinking out broader, even within the disability sector, it's pretty unknown and not on the map. And that's with Victoria being the strongest state for self-advocacy. I would say it's almost invisible on the map in Northern Territory, Queensland. Western Australia has one or two groups that I know of. So depends who you ask. And why not? And Tasmania has a strong self-advocacy. So they're a bit more on the map. Why not? I think it's because it's not really funded. So that makes it hard to get the big voice out there and at the table. I think it's because self-advocacy groups, the volunteers work so hard on the issues that are important to them, on supporting each other, on doing the training, that they've not really got the time or the money to raise their profile. They're very known in some of the communities they work in, but not broader. And how does it get on the map? Well, I guess you'd call me a dreamer. Is that John Lennon? Oh, that's a bit embarrassing. Anyway, it would be lovely to have, as in the 80s, a national self-advocacy peak organisation. That used to be People First Australia. It would be lovely to have sustainable funded groups all over Australia and a strong coming together of those groups for a national voice. So getting on the map, I think, will take a bit of work and requires a bigger vision and money to go with making that vision happen.
Let me see. So do you reckon over the years we have developed our self-advocacy into a movement that we can be proud of?
I think self-advocacy goes through what I was saying this morning, boom and bust cycles. So in the 80s, I think without a doubt, it was a strong self-advocacy movement right across Australia. Yeah. But then it, with loss of funding, it fades away. But I think it's on the rise. I think the self-advocacy movement, hopefully, is starting to try and rebuild and go back to that national focus.
Peter, would you like your comment on that?
I agree. Self-advocacy is mostly more visible and on the map in Victoria than in the other states. But perhaps this is grandiose. Liz, perhaps you should, the NDIA should think about funding a national self-advocacy group. But the boom and bust hopefully we're in a boom period now, and we're booming.
And no more busts.
No more busts. About you, Chris. Have you got any fingers down there?
Well, one of the things I was thinking about when I saw this question was we've had a very strong grassroots development in Victoria across all sectors. So self-advocacy has grown from people desiring to have a say about their own lives, be able to talk for themselves instead of having somebody else talk for them. And I think one of the ways we strengthen our voices is to ensure that other people know that it is our voices that need to be heard and not through the filter of others. And I think there's perhaps some capacity building work for families that need to be done. Whenever I speak publicly, the parents always come up and say, oh, well, it's no point asking my son or daughter what they want, they won't know. When I talk to their son and daughter, they're quite clear about what they want and need. So we have to just perhaps reshape it a bit, yeah.
OK, thank you. By the way, as I said, if anyone got any comments, put your hand up and we will get to the rest.
Self-advocacy groups, more self-advocacy groups is a good idea. Self-advocacy groups are a good idea and very good. I'll ask a question. The fact that what about other people out in the community? Are you going to try to educate them too? Because there's still a lot of people in the community that do not understand the disabled and they need to be educated. Are the self-advocacy groups going to work out on different forums, and also that the fact that we have a recognition of getting the people out in the community to understand the disabled. Is that a possibility?
Who wants to do that?
I'll take that if you like. And certainly that's one of the things about the National Disability Strategy is the National Disability Strategy is one part of that. So that is about making sure that everything is included within the mainstream or the rest of the community, if you like. But it's our responsibility too. So each of us need to be able to inform the rest of the community, no, this is about me, I have to speak up about me. So it's very important that, yes, we continue to do that as a group and we continue to do that individually and not wait for somebody else to do it.
Now, thank you, group. Any more comment on that?
I've got one comment regarding educating people, especially young people, in terms of the ICANN network. About people with disabilities. One strategy we're taking is we've been going and mentoring the students at primary schools and high schools. Well, mainly we've just been taking in some of the students on the spectrum, like a small group of them, and taking them through activities regarding social skills. But what's great about that is that it starts to educate these kids' peers about it too, because the kids come out of the session and they talk about it and what they've learned, and also because they often become more confident through it, and they start to make wider networks. The networks around those kids will start to be educated about this about certain disabilities too. So that is one strategy we're taking.
Thank you, Chloe. Thank you very much. Now, I'm going to move on to the next question. It's a question from Melanie Moore for Evan.
So my name's Melanie. I'm reading out a question from one of our board members at Leadership Plus. I work at Leadership Plus. We're an advocacy service for people with disability and we prioritise people with an acquired brain injury. I'm really pleased to see Brain Injury Matters here and United Brains here today. The question is, how do we reveal rather than conceal the extraordinary benefits of what self-advocacy groups do for individuals, their families, their clinical and support workers, and their wider community?
Okay. Would anyone want to have a go at that? Yes.
Thank you. I think one of the really important things as the scheme moves towards understanding more about what works is for self-advocacy groups to start thinking about how the information about outcomes of self-advocacy can be collected. So at the moment, most of the funding is around, it's small grant funding around activities. Probably really, really important to start looking at some of the overseas models, particularly out of the UK, where there's a good body of evidence already around the importance of self-advocacy as a contributor to the achievements of improved outcomes. And that's what I would be encouraging self-advocacy groups to do. That's clearly, outcomes is clearly the way of the future right across human services. And I think this is something that self-advocacy groups would be well served to do. And we don't have to reinvent the wheel. We don't have time and probably don't have the resources, but there's a good body of evidence in the UK. And if I was involved in self-advocacy, that's where I'd start. It's a combination of, you know, if you're working with an individual or with some groups of people, it's collecting from the first part of that engagement where that individual wants to be, and then evaluating the progress and the achievement of that is what I would suggest would be a good start. The scheme is interested in outcomes, but it's also interested in dollars, and that's kind of the balanced scorecard, and you've got to keep an eye on both. So I think the other thing that self-advocacy could start to collect, and the scheme will be doing that anyway for all funded supports, is does it make a change to safeguarding, you know, the informal safeguarding? If safeguarding will never work if it's about paid supports. It will work if it's about informal, strong informal networks. And does it maximise someone's independence? And is that sustainable over time? They're the sorts of things that self-advocacy groups probably need to start thinking about.
We've got a lot of people who hand up. Right behind you, boy. Yeah, ma'am.
My name's Jane Hopkins. I work for Vision Australia. I can see that self-advocacy needs to be measured, and I can see that we've got some fantastic role models in self-advocacy. But I work with young children, and my role, as I see it at the moment, is partly to teach children how to self-advocate from a very early age. And so I guess I'm wondering if we break down self-advocacy into its component parts, what do we see those as? What should I be teaching apart from providing great role models?
So that was what should we be teaching kids as role models?
Yeah.
You know, there's a Scope does a 1 in 4 poll which looks at the community attitudes to people with disabilities, and so many people with disabilities in that poll say that they feel really isolated and discriminated against. And I remember too a Stella Young article where she wrote about a friend of hers who had a disability, and he thought when he grew up he would either die or lose his disability. Because when he looked at TV and he looked around on the streets, he just didn't see other people with disabilities. So I think for all people with disabilities, whether they're children or adults, having connections and role models with other people with disabilities is really critical.
I'm really good for that. It all goes back to education about me. Disability, and it also goes back to how I cope with the disability too. Because thank you so much for that comment.
I think
You got one?
If I can just make another comment on that one, can I suggest that young children select their parents wisely? Because I grew up in the era where people with disabilities or children were supposed to be seen and not heard, that children with disabilities were supposed to be in segregated schools and in segregated employment. And my parents said, no, not my daughter. And I was probably pushed more than the rest of my family. I have six sisters and three brothers. But the really, I mean, and we can see it now. So the people of my generation were segregated and weren't taught to talk about their own rights. Whereas the younger people now, and I work with a lot of great young people like Ariana, for example, they know what they want, they know what they need, and they're not scared to say so. So my advice would be to teach children that they have rights too. That's the primary part of it.
Exactly. And, thank you very much.
Regarding teaching children about self-advocacy, well, because it's children, I don't know how old these ones are, but I've been working with some myself. And, yeah, you've really got to break things down easily for them sometimes. Like, I don't know, the way I would break it down is first you've got to teach them about acceptance. They've got to accept what difference, condition or disability they have and hopefully encourage others to accept it. And then they've got to learn something about pride. Like, you know, be proud of what you have. It can be a part of who you are. And they've got to learn to see it in a positive light. Because, you know, all the clinical diagnoses, they're always deficit-based models most of the time. But there are a lot of good things that come out of it too. And so I guess you can teach the kids, like, you know, what are the good things about their specific condition? What does it allow them to be able to do that maybe other people can't? And
then get you coming. Okay, if they know more on that one, otherwise, Ariana is kind of willing to ask the next question.
Hi, Ariane from Raising Our Voices and the Organising Committee of the Q&A. We have a couple of questions that we'd like to ask the panel. I'm going to ask the first two. And the first question I would like to direct to Peter Ferguson and Tricia Maloney. The first question is, how will the NDIS make a difference to self-advocacy in both of your opinions?
Well, we are in the NDIS space, so they hopefully can't ignore us now. And the NDIA, as Liz Kent said, it doesn't just, it just isn't overthink the whole of disability, the a disability strategy, but the NDIA has a pretty powerful part of it, and for advocacy, hopefully they know we are around and they'll support us and listen to us, and we won't be backward in saying what we want.
And Trish?
Well, I'm hoping that it really will make a big difference, because this is based around individuals, right? So there's a capacity building component within that for self-advocacy. So I think that as it develops and people are then saying, I actually want to speak for myself, then the NDIS has the obligation to do that, to support people to do that. So I actually am quite hopeful about that. And I think the more people who speak out, the better it'll be for all of us.
And I also have another question. I might just ask Pauline if she can come and help me read this question, because my sight's not very good today. With change comes anxiety, is that it? When will the NDIA provide self-advocacy groups with some certainty about their future?
I've seen that one for you, Liz.
It was kind of coming my way, wasn't it? Thank you. Look, as I said, what's happening at the moment is part of the bilateral agreements, so the agreements between each state or territory government and the Commonwealth about how the scheme will roll out in those jurisdictions, is this: the state and territory governments are doing a mapping exercise about what they currently fund in advocacy and in other programs. And this goes back to the part of my presentation this morning about ILC, information, linkages and capacity. So a long new word for what used to be Tier 2. So once that mapping's done, it's underway now and coming, certainly in Victoria, coming very close to being final, to being finished, then that will inform the agency's approach to commissioning or contracting for ILC, and self-advocacy certainly has a big role in that. So I don't think anyone needs to worry about responding to a tender over Christmas. Hopefully we're not that unreasonable.
I mentioned you, Pauline. I said to Liz, Pauline says, does that mean I have to cancel my holidays in January?
But certainly you should see the commissioning framework. There's been quite a lot of co-design around that as well. So you should see the commissioning framework come out before Christmas, and then the ILC tenders, I would imagine, will be early in the year.
We have a comment back from Neil Cameron.
Hi, it's Neil Cameron again from United Brains. Liz, just to add to that, as you said that Victoria has almost completed their work on seeing how much they fund groups and advocacies throughout the state. When NDIA rolls out the support for groups, is it going to be a similar quantity of groups throughout Australia, or are we going to concentrate on state-by-state type basis as it exists now and try and expand on that?
I didn't hear the last part of that. Could you just maybe repeat that?
The question really is, when the NDIA rolls out their support for groups in the future, is it going to be on a national basis per capita, or is it going to be on a sort of group basis that we have now in Victoria, New South Wales and Queensland, etc.?
I probably can't answer that because it does depend on what we do with the information from state governments and how we turn that into a commissioning strategy. I think it's fair to say, probably for the through until the scheme gets to full scheme in about 2019, there will be some differences based on what already exists in states and territories, I think. And then I think it's reasonable that it will start to look a little bit more consistent across the country.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for coming. Thank you for being involved. May you be safe. May you be happy. See you again. Thank you to our beautiful panel. Thank you for being involved. Bye-bye.